is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
It's that time of year again. Mountain cattle sales and calf sales are going on at the moment in Victoria's high country. We're going to cross there shortly to see how things are selling. It's probably a good year to be doing that, isn't it? We'll find out shortly. I'd love to know if you're travelling in that way or if you're selling your cattle. You should give us a call and let us know how things are going. 1300 977 222. You can send us a text 0467 842 722. If you're buying as well, you can let us know what's going on up that way. The 2022 Rural Women's Award has been handed out in Victoria. We will meet the winner on our program shortly. A rural publisher from regional Victoria is this year's winner, and she'll take you through what she plans to do with the bursary as part of that prize. $15,000 as part of that prize is what you win, and much, much more. We would love you to be involved in the program today. Send us a text 0467 842 722. You can call 1300 977 222. It's time for rural news now, and Kelly Lazzaro. Kelly.
Thanks, Warwick. Health authorities are concerned about the rapid spread of Japanese encephalitis further south in Australia to Greater Bendigo. The virus has been detected at 21 piggeries in Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland and South Australia, and more than 12 people have been infected. Three Victorians remain in hospital. Victoria's Deputy Chief Health Officer Deborah Friedman says climate change and heavy rain along the east coast have contributed to the movement of infected mosquitoes further south.
The concern is that we've got a new pathogen here that has the capacity to cause clinical disease, and certainly from a human health perspective, because we now know that we have the mosquito vector here, the capacity for ongoing spread, particularly seasonally across summer and the hot months, and perhaps the end of spring and the early part of autumn, would pose a significant risk, and it would probably have an impact on tourism as well to the state, but it would also indicate that we would need to undertake a very broad vaccination campaign if this had a foothold in the southern states of Australia. If it became endemic and couldn't be eradicated, it would mean that we'd need to broadly vaccinate people in the population. And we hope that we don't get to that point, but so far we've gotten new advice from ATAGI that just came out on those in scope for vaccination currently, and this is going to be reviewed frequently. So we're progressing right now with the first people in scope for vaccination, and that's exactly the same as what the other states are doing, and we'll move on from there.
Whilst flooding has hit the east coast of Australia, a little further inland, things are drying out. Clermont in central Queensland has recorded just 8% of its average summer rainfall. Just 14 millimetres has fallen in February. Peter Misford is a grain grower based near Clermont and says the last time heavy rain fell on his farm was November.
And since then, we've virtually had no more rain. So the crops are looking for a drink now with the heat that we're getting, up to 42 degrees, isn't doing much good for the crop. So we are looking for rain, but it's not real brilliant. We'll get something off our sorghum. The early sorghum we planted, the grain is starting to colour up. So we'll get something off that. You know, I'm not saying it'll be a very big yield, but we'll get something off that. The later sorghum that's battling now, it's only maybe 10, 12 inches high. You know, it's going to be a battle if it gets no more rain. And then the cotton, yeah, it's going to be pretty disastrous.
In China, the condition of the nation's winter wheat crop could be the worst in history, according to China's agriculture minister. Speaking to reporters on the sidelines of the country's annual parliament meeting, Minister of Agriculture and Rural Affairs Tang Renjiang said that rare heavy rainfall last year delayed the planting of about one-third of the normal wheat acreage. China is the world's largest wheat consumer. And now to celebrate a local woman in ag this International Women's Day, when Jess Knight from Corryong was at high school, she was told girls don't do ag, so instead she went to university to study arts law, but the career in law didn't last long. Jess now lives just outside of Stratford in Gippsland with her three sons, husband Stephen, and 450 milking cows on their own dairy farm. As well as being a farmer, she also sits on the Gipps Dairy Board and the Young Farmer Advisory Council. She says support from the Victorian Rural Women's Network helped her step up into those leadership roles.
It's hard for rural women especially. There's a lot of opportunities out there that you sort of can't take on due to your location and your commitments. And I think COVID's really changed things. It's made you realise how much of life can be done online. I was lucky that all of the training that was done through this were run online at night time, which, you know, being 3 hours from Melbourne where they would have usually been run, it really made a difference for me being able to attend all of these things.
And in an Australian first, black jewfish have been successfully spawned and bred in an aquaculture setting. Researchers at the Darwin Aquaculture Centre are working to see if black jewfish can be grown in a commercial fish farming setting in northern Australia. Aquaculture Research Officer Andrea Taylor says it's a big win for researchers and hopefully for industry.
These are 45-day-old black jewfish. They look like little black tadpoles. They are sitting on the bottom, feeding happily. So it's an Australian first, and it could be a world first. We're not 100% sure, but nothing's been published on this species being farmed before. So it was a pretty exciting pilot trial when we've got our first spawn. We followed the eggs through the larval stages to the juvenile stages and mapped out every part of the way to see how they would fit into aquaculture and photograph the development. And they responded really well to our current intensive marine larval rearing protocols. There's definitely a lot of fine-tuning to do, as it is with any new aquaculture species. And we are planning subsequent trials to basically produce a hatchery manual for production.
And that's it for today's edition of Rural News. Thanks, Warwick.
Oh, it sounded quite nice in the little wet place of breeding jewfish there. Thank you very much for that, Kelly. Kelly Lazaro there with Rural News.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
You're going to meet the winner of the 2022 Rural Women's Award in Victoria shortly on the program. We're also going up to the high country cattle sales, but we have some news on Japanese encephalitis to share with you. It's been detected in one of Australia's largest piggery operations. A spokesman from Rivalea has confirmed Japanese encephalitis virus has been detected at the Corowa piggery. Rivalea is one of the biggest pig operations in Australia, and the company, which is now owned by JBS, has a growing and abattoir facility for pigs at Corowa in the Murray River region west of Albury-Wodonga. Meanwhile, border region and riverina residents of that area of New South Wales are being urged to remain vigilant against mosquito bites as the first human case of the virus in New South Wales is confirmed. New South Wales Health confirmed one highly probable case of the virus in a resident of the New South Wales-Victoria border region. The person is in ICU in a stable condition and they're a resident from that region. Several more patients in New South Wales are undergoing further testing and more cases are expected to be confirmed over coming weeks. The mosquito-borne virus has been detected at 13 piggeries in New South Wales, not just Rivalea's at Corowa, but 13 across New South Wales, also six in Victoria. And we'll get to that info in a minute. But Dr. Catherine Todd, public health physician with New South Wales Health, spoke to the media. This is what she had to say.
So we do know that there are quite a number of people that have presented with symptoms consistent with the virus, and that's in the order of over 10, but I can't give you the exact number. In terms of the locations that they've occurred in, there have been cases from a variety of different places across New South Wales, and these are predominantly rural areas. At the moment, the focus does appear to be around the cross-border region, and particularly around the Murray River.
So what's the circumstances of the person that's ended up in ICU? How did they come across the disease?
So I can't provide specific comment on that particular case, but in general the pattern that is emerging of the cases that we are aware of is that they're people from areas that are more rural and regional, and occasionally they report activities that might have put them in contact with mosquitoes, such as fishing and camping.
Okay, so this is not necessarily related to piggeries and things like we were talking about last week.
Yeah, so the connection that we've got with piggeries is that we've detected the virus in pigs on piggeries. And the difference between pigs and humans is that pigs can test positive for the virus much more easily than humans can. So in some ways they can be a bit of a marker for where the virus might have occurred. So certainly it has been detected on pigs at a number of piggeries, but at the moment we're still really exploring the relationship between the detections on the piggeries and the cases that have occurred in humans.
So it can be contracted by humans from pigs? Or?
Pigs are what we call an amplifier. So humans will contract it from mosquitoes, but the mosquitoes can bite the pig and pick the virus up that way and then bite a human and infect the human that way. pathway. So you can't get it from direct contact from pigs and not from eating pork products, but you can get it from being bitten by a mosquito that's bitten an infected pig.
So people still are at risk even if they have nothing to do with pigs and
piggeries? Yes. People are most... anybody who is in an environment where they might be bitten by mosquitoes is potentially at risk. So that's why the best steps that you can do are take those steps to protect yourself from mosquito bites.
So you mentioned that there are possibly 10 people that you're looking at. Are they all from sort of Albury to Corowa? Are you able to say what region you're looking at the moment?
I wouldn't be able to say that with any certainty at this point, no. There have been a couple of suspected cases from the Albury-Corowa area, but in terms of the more broader geographical distribution of the cases, I can't comment at this point, but we should have additional information tomorrow.
So what about the role of vaccination? I know they were talking about vaccinating piggery workers. Will that be something that could be rolled out to wider populations?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So at the moment, we're prioritising our vaccination efforts on piggery workers as the people that we're most certain are increased risk. And there's work happening quite rapidly between the states that are affected and also the federal government to develop a vaccination strategy that might apply more broadly. The challenge with this vaccine is that it's only ever previously been used for people who are going to travel to an overseas country. And so working out who to prioritise and how to roll it out is a piece of work that just needs to be completed. But that's sort of certainly being worked on rapidly.
That's Dr. Catherine Todd, public health physician with New South Wales Health. And as you say, further detections of Japanese encephalitis across Victoria as well, with cases confirmed at 6 piggeries there. It's across the Loddon, Campaspe, Wangaratta, Gunnawarra, Greater Shepparton and Greater Bendigo Shires as well. Obviously, much more information on this online now at abc.net.au/news. And you'll be hearing it through news bulletins throughout the day. 1300 977 222. If you'd like to call, text 0467 842 722. We'd love to know if you're selling any cattle in the high country. We'd love to know how that's been going. We're going to cross there now to hear more about the sales. It is that time for the annual mountain calf sales in the high country of Victoria. It's an exciting time, iconic time, really. That word gets thrown around too much, but it almost applies to these cattle sales, I think. To give you a taste of how things were feeling, here's a little bit from this morning's Rural Reports. It's David Hill, the livestock manager at Elders in Omeo, speaking to Eden Henninen. It's just talking about how he thinks it could be one of the biggest sales in 10 years.
Yeah, the numbers, we've had fires and droughts through the high country over the last 10 years, so numbers are slowly rebuilding. So, yeah, numbers are gradually rebuilding, you know, the guys that are marketing for this sale. So, yeah, 8,000 will probably be one of the biggest sales that we have had in 10 years, that's for sure.
And it's been a great season for cattle. What's quality like?
Yeah, season's absolutely fantastic. Some of the older guys, this is a one-in-a-generation season. Certainly, Bonamba and say in Omeo, and the quality of the cattle. The younger cattle that are spring drop and autumn drop, you know, they're certainly a fraction heavier, but you can't really get the cattle any heavier for that age. But in the yearling cattle, some of the yearling cattle might be 40 or 50 kilos heavier.
Wow. And so you're expecting some big records then?
It'll be interesting to see. The cattle market's still, you know, there's a lot of confidence in the cattle market and the beef industry throughout. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of repeat buyers that attend a sale, you know, specifically to purchase cattle that they do annually for what they do in their program. So, yeah, I think you will... I think we should say should be very confident with our results.
What is everyone saying ahead of the sales? I imagine there's a bit of excitement around.
Yeah, there is. Traditionally, this time of year with the season, there's a lot of confidence. Everyone seems to be very, very confident, and there's a lot of certainly forward going confidence with the market as well with heavy cattle. So, you know, we understand weaners, you know, are making substantial money at the moment, but there's an outside. There's an upside for ongoing with cattle that are heavy going forward.
So that's Elders Livestock Manager at Omeo, David Hill, speaking with Eden Henninen. A lot of confidence there, but has that confidence relayed into prices at sales so far? Graham Fulgrabe is a Sharp Fulgrabe manager, has been selling cattle today, can tell us how things are performing. Graham, welcome back to the country.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here on a great day with great people and... Gee, it is good.
You've said the word great about five times there, so I'm guessing it's been pretty good this morning.
Yeah, static. What Hilly just said prior to the sale, Hilly, yes, it's all taken place. We've had an enormous sale. a ripping crowd of people here. One fella lost his car. He said last time I lost it was at the MCG, and he lost it here. So, no, big crowd of people, good cattle. And what did happen, and David did reiterate there about it, the cattle, everyone said, oh, they're going to be heavier, they're going to be this. What it did, the good season we've had, just brought the quality out in the cattle. The cattle were darker, better coated. And we noticed our cattle came in yesterday morning, and yesterday lunchtime were all penned up by 7 o'clock last night, stood the night in the yard. They've stood up overnight a lot better than what they normally do. And they've drunk water, they're content, and we've been blessed. There's someone up there who's been looking after us because we have not had a spot of rain here. You go below the gap, back into Omeo, back to Bensdale, back over the other side. They've all had rain last night and yesterday, and we're dry as a badger, and it's magnificent.
You beauty. So you had the Hinamunji sale today, and you described a little bit of there, but can you take us to the scene? What were the runs of cattle looking like today, and what was the atmosphere like this morning?
Oh, look, the runs of cattle were good, and as I said, if you look from our grandstand and people did take videos of the thing, the different colour of the coat of the cattle, the different, and that was the quality, and that's the season that's come out. And today's crowd was a massive crowd, and cars, you know, it was standing room only. Anyway, what it did was people have come this year, and they bid with a lot more confidence. Last year, this was 12 months ago, they bid, but they were hesitant, and they didn't know what their outcome was, what their costs were going to be. They've had 12 months of it, and now they know what they're doing, and by geez, made a difference. And for the bloke on the rail, it's a lot easier going selling.
I bet. Take us to the rail now. How did the cattle perform? What were prices like today?
Righto, we bounced the ball on a pen of 16-month-old steers at Donald Betts's. They had their milk teeth. They were 16 months old and they weighed 600 kilos. So there's the proof of the pudding. Then we went on to the real calves, 12-month-old calves, and they're making 2,700, 2,500, 2,600. Then on to your runs of calves of like your, as they said, your spring and autumn drop calves. They're the real mountain calves, and you're still in $2,000 bracket upwards. And look, it went on, and I think there was four pens under about $1,800. So that's the steers. The heifers, look, there was a wonderful opportunity for people to buy heifers for future breeders because they've got terrific trading price for their old cow. I'd love to buy a Toyota, I don't like it. And they just bought these top heifers, took them home to breed from, and we had an exceptional lineup of 140 Angus calves of Courtney Ferguson's from the Omeo Valley here, Angus heifer calves. The best heifer calves you see line up in a thing. And they went to Orbost, to Gunnedah, to Tamworth, everywhere over Australia. Feedlots bought some of them, and then breeders bought the top end of them. But good cattle and a great result.
Yeah, so Donald Betts's first line got over 3,000, didn't they? And you had a few pushing up near that area at the moment. That's really good prices.
I'd reckon. Yeah, no. You can't take the smile off Donald's face. No, he had the top heifer calves too at $2,700, but they went to a breeder to breed from. But no, he's got a good name and good cattle. But look, Peter Stood had a magnificent draft of cattle. Ronnie Conley, a legend from Omeo, he had a ripping draft of cattle. Brian Dyers, Tony Fitzgerald, they run up on Mount Bogong. Good calves. But no, a pleasure to stand over them, and we had a ripping day.
So Hinamunji's done. The sales move on. Different agents have different sales in different locations. What's the rest of your week like, Graeme?
Oh, put my feet up. they're going to Omeo now on the black sales. David's there selling now. They come back out here to Bunambra and sell their red cattle, Hereford cattle, here at Bunambra Elder Zoo. Then tomorrow morning they go to Ensay and sell their cattle down there. Back up to Omeo for their red sale in the afternoon. So, yeah, 2 days of the best cattle you'd see in Australia.
And where are they going?
Oh, look, we were represented here today with four states. And, you know, you wouldn't have a Kelpie dog to go far enough back they've come from. They're magnificent to see those fellas, repeat buyers. But, you know, Tamworth, Gunnedah, Dolby, Queensland, South Australia, CDC, Victoria, South Gippsland, repeat buyers from South Gippsland. Just buying a wonderful real spread. And the trucks, just now as I speak, the trucks are backed in. Sherby Grimerson from Dunedin's backed in, loading cattle to go to Killara. then he's got other cattle loading them to go to Canargo. Roaches are back in too. They're going to Myrtleford. South Australia truck cranes have just pulled in now to take Graham Wards now. So that's all queued up now. We've sold out of sausages and we've sold out of cattle.
Sold out of snags. Oh, geez, yeah. You have to do better next year, won't you?
Well, the local school, they doubled their order. I said, well, double your order and add 10. And they did, and they sold out at bloody, 10:30, 11 o'clock.
So, that's pressure.
Hey, we're on the sponge cakes and the chocolate slice now.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound too difficult. And Graeme, as we mentioned, the high prices and just the value in cattle from a good season, can you tell us what this means to high country communities to have this kind of cash injection and such a good sale?
Yeah, well, it does too, and look, they've had a kick in the bum with, you know, fires and droughts and this sort of thing, and I've been coming here for 42 years, selling up here in the mountains, and this is my 42nd year, and this is the best 3 years of season-wise we've had, but I've lived in East Gippsland, and you can bet your bottom dollar we're not going to go on forever this good season, so we've had dry times and good times, but look, the cash injection is wonderful. You know, the car dealers, the tractor dealers, if they could get them into Australia, they can sell them with their eyes closed. Yeah, and it all rubs off.
And do you celebrate? Are you going out to celebrate at one of the high country pubs tonight? What are you doing, Graeme?
The pub's closed. We're all here at the thing, and we've got a row of four caravans beside our yards. We've got a very good cook in Lynn Jamison. She made a stew last night for us in the crock pot. Don't tell anyone the recipe. Oh, well, she will not have to cut my arms off to tell you. But they would be the best feed you've had. Then we eat this stew, and what she brings out now, peaches and cream and custard. So there, we're living it up. And there's an old fella here too, John Wells, more 85 years of age from Jindabyne. He comes over every year to work for us and comes with us, and he makes a home rum, and by gee, it's a good rum. And so I reckon we might have a rum and that and have another good feed. We'll be right.
Oh, it sounds like you've got it absolutely sorted. Now, just as you look, before we say goodbye to you, Graeme, as you look around, we've talked a lot about the good season. You said 3 years that you can't remember the like in the past 40. What's it look like at the moment? Is it still green up in the high country?
That is, yeah. There's a dry cover, and I look out over the hills there, but it's green underneath. Very, very good, and a great, great cover of grass, and they'll get through green right through the summer, but a great cover of grass for protection going into the winter with the amount of feed they've got, and all their hay sheds are full, they're chock-a-block, and look, it's just tremendous. So they've got confidence, and they've got memories in the back of their so that they've all had loads of hay coming in here 2 years ago and that sort of thing after the fires and the drought. So yeah, very, very confident year, season-wise. And look, they've just let a run of calves that are going, we've just let them out of the yards now, and there's 65 of them, and they're not going to Wednesday morning. So we let them out, they've opened the gate, and they've gone into about a 30-acre paddock. They've jogged out, they've gone straight to the dam, they're having a drink on the edge of the dam. Now they've gone up and just walking away, and gee, they've settled down. So that proves the quality of the cattle, the condition of the cattle. There's no sting or go in them, and gee, they're great cattle to handle, and they're just beautiful setup.
I've got a text here, Graeme, that says, this cattle agent has more one-liners than you was, and I don't know if that's a compliment to you or not, Graeme, but we're just going with it. And before we let you go, Graeme Fulgrave's been with you, been selling cattle at Hinnamungee today. It's part of the Mountain Calf Sales. Tell us about the Mountain Calf Sales. Just how important are they to the area, and what do they mean, I suppose, to the culture and the history of your part of the world?
Oh, look, repeated. A fellow brought a photo here to us today, and he showed me of AML and F back in 1956. And here's the bloke, and he said, who's this bloke, who's that bloke? And those fellows were legends, and they were painting the calves to walk them down from these mountain calf sales. Now, today, we've got these magnificent B-double trucks and what have you, and they can double-deck them over to the other side, then B-double from here to Kingdom Come. Look, it's wonderful, and it's great on the stock, and they get rid of them. So the history of the mountain sales is gone. There's no droving and that sort of thing, but the quality of the cattle is still here, and they're magnificent in the way they handle. But whole different way of life, and I've got to keep pinching myself every now and then to think, what era am I in, you know? And to see this, and it, look, it's all good. With computerised, they've scanned the cattle, the girls have processed the sale that in here, and, you know, it's all up and running, and it's good. And the local people, you know, there's fellas here, there goes Jim Pendergast, just let his mob of cattle out on the road. He's got a Kelpie dog, and he sent at the head of them, it's pulled them up, and there's another bloke let his go. They've held them in the corner of the paddock here, and, oh, look, it's magnificent to watch.
Oh, Graeme, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking us to the High Country Calf Sales today.
Thank you very much, Warwick. Have a good one.
We certainly will. That is Graeme Fulgrave from Sharp Fulgrave. And, well, we had everything, didn't we? The run out of sausages. We heard about the homemade rum, the stews. Also got some cattle price information as well. Plenty of dog commentary and talk of how the cattle were going. Absolutely brilliant to hear what it's like up there. And if you're up there, and you've been selling or buying, let us know. 1300 977 222. You can text 0467 842 722. Let's get some news headlines now. Find out what's happening around regional Victoria. Courtney Howe is in the newsroom for us today. Courtney.
Good afternoon, Woz. A Supreme Court trial has begun between a government-backed timber organisation and a Victorian wildlife group. The Wildlife of the Central Highlands Group claims the government-owned Vic Forest acted unlawfully when it logged unburnt forest areas after the Black Summer bushfires and damaged vital habitats of the national threatened native creatures, including the sooty owl, powerful owl, greater glider and smoky mouse. Vic Forest's lawyers have yet to respond. The trial's expected to run for 3 weeks. Police are investigating after a man was stabbed near Mildura this morning. Police say emergency services were called to 15th Street in Irimple just before 7 o'clock, where a man was found with serious injuries. Police established a crime scene at the site and investigations are ongoing. A court has heard an international meat worker broke a bone in his spine after a pile of sheepskins fell on him at a Colac abattoir. Australian Lamb Colac pleaded guilty to 2 charges relating to the incident in its skin shed in 2018. In a victim impact statement, the man told the court he was taken to hospital after being knocked unconscious and suffered ongoing health issues. Australian Lamb Colac will be sentenced on Friday. And medical centres on the New South Wales-Victoria border are binning thousands of COVID vaccinations amid a decline in the number of people coming forward for their booster doses. Victorian government data shows booster doses administered at state vaccination centres peaked mid-January but has declined since, and Albury-Wodonga border GPs say that's being reflected at their own centres. iHealth Albury Medical Clinic Director and Founder Amy Assegall says over the summer there was 6-week waiting lists for boosters and now it's tough watching vaccines being wasted. And that's the latest in regional news for this afternoon, Woz.
Thank you very much for Courtney, and thank you very much for the sponge cake you brought into ABC Shepparton's office this afternoon. It was fantastic. Maybe not as good as what Graham's description was in the High Country, but I think that was absolutely amazing. Thank you, Courtney. And she's shaking her head at me as she exits the studio. We'll stop there, won't we? Plenty of texts coming in. We'll get to more of those in a minute. 0467 842 722. After that, we're going to a protest on the steps of Parliament House in the city today to do with the Western Transmission Project we've been speaking about a lot, the AusNet project to take power from renewable energy in Western Vic to the city. There's people not happy about the transmission lines that will be built on their property. We'll cross there shortly. Before that, though, let's find out what's happening weather-wise around our state today. Michael Efron is a senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology. G'day, Michael.
G'day, Warwick. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. How are we looking around Victoria today?
Yeah, it's looking pretty wet again through the far east of the state and much of the Gippsland High Country, as well as that low pressure trough off the New South Wales coast starts to deepen and moves to the southeast. So we're seeing areas of rain in that region, and it's pretty wet with over 100 millimetres over the last two and a bit days in some locations. Mount Waldron Fire Tower, 127 millimetres. Mount Cairn Fire Tower, 126. Mount Monappa, 87. So Mallacoota, 64 as well. So pretty wet in those parts. And not surprisingly, we've got some flooding as a result, minor flood warnings out the Cairns, Genoa and Snowy rivers as well. So keep an eye on that, with that rain likely to continue for the rest of today and through the first part of Wednesday as well. Along with the flood warnings, we do have sheep graziers warning out as well for East Gippsland. And for the rest of the state, we are seeing generally dry conditions, just some isolated showers through the ranges just around Ballarat. North of the Dividing Range, pretty clear conditions. But one feature across the state is some pretty strong and gusty south to southeasterly winds, especially over the ranges, gusting to about 70 to 80 kilometres an hour. So no warnings out at this stage for that. The low warning threshold at the moment, but we are watching that closely and will issue any warnings if we think that's going to exceed 90 kilometres an hour. But in terms of temperatures for the rest of today through the south of the state, looking at the high teens to low 20s, through the north, looking at the mid-20s. So reasonably mild conditions today. On Wednesday, we do see that rain, as I said, through East Gippsland, tending to ease to showers throughout the late morning and into the afternoon as that low starts to move away to the southeast. And across the rest of southern Victoria, we'll see some isolated showers, I think more likely through the southwest district, but they should clear into the afternoon. And across northern parts of the state, dry and mostly sunny skies with temperatures again in the mid-20s in the south, looking at the high teens to low 20s again. And then following Wednesday, we're looking at pretty settled conditions Thursday and into Friday and across the long weekend, with a high pressure system south of the Bight just moving very slowly towards Tasmania. So we will see isolated showers through Gippsland and along the coast, but I think more likely Thursday and Friday than across the weekend. And temperatures gradually increasing as well. I think Thursday and Friday we'll see the low 20s in the south, mid-20s across the north. And then once we hit the weekend, we're looking at the low 30s across the north, mid to high 20s in the south, and pretty settled conditions with winds becoming light as well, apart from afternoon coastal sea breezes. And then into Labor Day, it's still looking pretty settled with that high moving across Tasmania. So we'll see temperatures in the low 30s across the north, high 20s to low 30s in the south. So once we get past today and tomorrow, we are looking at an extended period of fairly settled weather across the state with light winds as well, and no sign of that humidity which we have seen in recent times.
And any warnings to keep an eye on, Michael?
Yeah, those flood warnings that we've got out at the moment, so they're just minor flood warnings, but if we do see that rain picking up, then we could see those increasing to moderate. But at this stage, just minor for the Snowy Cairn and Genoa catchments.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for the update.
Thanks, Warwick.
Michael Efron there, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology. If you're in East Gippsland Way, you're getting all the rain. We'd love the updates. 1300 977 222 or text 0467 842 722. Let's head to Melbourne, though, now on the Country Hour, where hundreds of farmers are rallying at Parliament House in Melbourne today against the Western Transmissions Project. The project plans to build 85-metre-high, 500-kilovolt transmission lines connecting renewable energy projects in Western Victoria to Melbourne. And our reporter, Jane McNaughton, is there. Jane, take us to Melbourne today. What does it look like where you are?
Well, Warwick, you don't usually see tractors on the street of Melbourne, but today there are. There's between 20 and 30 tractors that are just about to drive past Parliament House here on Spring Street. It's just the beginning of the rally here at Parliament House, and already there's hundreds of people here. I'd estimate between 200 and 300 at this stage. There's plenty of signs. People have bought buckets of spuds to show what kind of produce that is, they say, at risk if this project goes ahead. We've got lots of placard signs here, some of them saying the classic piss off AusNet, other ones saying that there's going to be, the government's going to be responsible for cutting down trees that are hundreds and hundreds of years old. I've got Emma Muir here. She's with Stop AusNet's Towers and she's organised today's protest. Emma, what does your sign say?
My sign says Stop AusNet Towers, go underground.
So why are you here today?
We're here today to tell the government and tell Victoria that we are pro-renewable, but this is not the way to transmit the renewable energy to Melbourne. It needs to go underground.
So why did you have to come to Melbourne to let the government know your feelings?
Because for nearly 2 years now, we've been requesting meetings with the Premier, the Minister for Energy and Environment and the Planning Minister, and they haven't come to us. So we've brought our fight to Melbourne, and it was a big deal doing this for our tractors and our guys to come down here.
So you mentioned that you'd prefer this power line, or the people here would prefer this power line partly or wholly go underground. But we know that right now the government's under a lot of pressure financially. We're coming through a pandemic where a lot of unexpected money has been spent. Do you think the government has the resources to be able to pay for the more expensive undergrounding option?
Absolutely. I don't think you can put a price on our lives. It's imperative that this project's done properly and safely. There's plenty of money for Melbourne. There's plenty of money for the tunnels, the underground tunnels. Why not us? We live in Victoria too. We deserve to be treated fairly and equally.
So you've been speaking recently for the last 2 years on behalf of many, many people that we can see here. But personally, Emma, what kind of toll is this taking on you?
Yeah, look, it's really been hard. It's nearly 2 years that we've been fighting this. We struggle with this emotionally and mentally. We're a fifth-generation farmer. My husband's devastated at the thought that we could lose this. He'll be the one that loses his property. And I just couldn't watch that happen. So I get up every in the morning just to make sure I can have my beautiful husband in one piece and have... have our beautiful view of our beautiful countryside and not be ruined by these towers for no benefit to us.
So what's your message? This is an election year. We've had the Liberal Party today come out with some new renewable energy targets. We've also got the Premier who has on multiple occasions said that renewable energy is the future. But what's your message to either party coming up to the state election?
Look, we're all pro-renewable. We certainly understand the climate is changing, but this project doesn't take into effect, it doesn't even mention climate change in this project. I just think you really need to make sure you understand who you're affecting by putting these projects together and do it. Let us speak at the table. We weren't stakeholders. We need to be included in these decisions before they get put out to the public. It's not up to big business. It's not big business profits. It's Australian and Victorian people that are at stake.
So by the sounds of that, you're calling for a complete hijack of the process to get these plans on the table in the first place.
Yep. So we're saying scrap it, send it back to the drawing board, get all the groups at the table, organise something that we can all be a part of and support, because we know we need a lot more renewables out in Western Victoria. We know VicGrid is going to build, I think, 10 more of these transmission lines. I do not want any other community to go through what we've been going through. It's just been devastating.
Oh, we might have lost Jane there from Parliament House while she tries to reconnect. We'll go there. As you heard, Jane McNaughton, our reporter there live from Parliament House, speaking about the Western Transmission Project, where there's a protest with hundreds of farmers at Parliament House today. Tractors in the main street of Melbourne near Spring Street, protesting the 85-metre high transmission lines, which will connect renewable energy projects to the city. They're hoping to get a meeting with some of the government officials, but as you heard, well, maybe doesn't sound too likely, but we'll see what happens there today with members of other political parties addressing that protest as well. I think we lost Jane, or have we got you back, Jane?
I'm here, Warwick. Sorry, I don't know which part of what time you lost me, no. But yeah, Emma Muir did just join me earlier, and yeah, she said that this is really a big imposition on the mental health of the farmers here as well.
And Jane, just to pick up on those points I was raising when we lost you, one is that the hope of meeting any officials from government by these protesters, do they think that's likely today?
No. So they have obviously invited members of the government to come out and speak to them here at the front of their workplace. So far, we know that we're going to have members of the Liberal and National Party and some independents potentially speaking today as well, in addition to farmers who will be calling for some pretty substantial changes to these project ahead of the state election. They're expecting both parties to listen, but at this stage they say that it's been absolute radio silence from the Victorian government.
And what has the government been saying in the past about this project and the need for it?
Well, they have said, Premier Daniel Andrews has said on multiple occasions that renewable energy is going to be the future of Victoria's energy grid. They have said previously that going underground, which is what a lot of these farmers want, is going to be extremely expensive, and that they're basically saying at the end of the day they're relying on the Environmental Effects Statement or ESS statement to make any decisions about whether or not this project will go forward.
And how long is that protest expected to last today?
Well, it's just starting to kick up now, actually, Warwick. The tractors are going to be driving past Parliament House any moment now. We're thinking probably, from what Emma Muir, the organisers, said, probably until about 2 o'clock. So we're looking at another hour or so of the protests before a lot of people get back on the buses and head back into regional Victoria where their homes are.
Well, more spuds and tractors on the steps of Parliament for a little while yet. Jane, thanks for taking us there.
Anytime.
Jane McNaughton there, our rural reporter from Central Victoria, who is on the steps of Parliament House today, where there is that protest about the Western Transmissions project, the AusNet project connecting renewable energy projects in Western Victoria to Melbourne. You're listening to The Country Hour. It is 1:45.
On ABC Radio Victoria, you're with Warwick Long for the Victorian Country Hour.
A rural magazine publisher is the winner of the 2022 Victorian AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. The winner gets a $15,000 bursary for a special project and actually the chance to receive another $20,000 when the National Award is presented in Canberra in September. Kimberly Furness from Strathfield Say in Victoria is Victoria's winner for 2022, announced last night, and she can join you now. Kimberly, welcome to the Country Hour and congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a big 24 hours, a great 24 hours.
What does it mean to win an award like this, particularly this year?
Yeah, look, I know this is going to sound cliche, but I truly wasn't expecting it. And I had nothing prepared. Just to make it to the top three was, you know, an honour in itself and a great way to start 2022 after, you know, two really challenging years of homeschooling four kids, and you know, just even with the business side of it, you know, I only got three mags out of what is a quarterly publication, and just to be recognized last night, it's like, wow, like I am on the right track. People are noticing the change that I'm making, and yeah, I suppose I've got this burst of new energy to just keep pushing forward now.
You won the award for what the judges described was your innovative way of celebrating the role women play in rural and regional life. Can you tell us a bit about Oak Magazine? Where did it come from?
Yeah, of course. Well, it's a print magazine first and foremost. So, I mean, when we talk about innovative, we probably don't think about print, do we, as being that. But what I've done with it is just built this community ecosystem around it. So, you know, we have the print magazine, but we also have, you know, the social media side, the digital side, in-person events, also a podcast on there. So really building this community where women can connect with other like-minded women and feel, I suppose, safe and comfortable sharing their stories, because business ownership is really, really hard. There's lots of highs and then there's some, you know, incredible hurdles. So, you know, we create that space where people can have that impact. And to be honest, it was lots of little puzzle pieces of how it came about. But one of the big ones was standing in front of the magazine aisle in a supermarket and not seeing one that spoke to me, Warwick, like as a, you know, a female mother of four that, you know, lives in a regional rural town who runs a business. And honestly, that was really the catalyst. That was that driving force of, you know, you can't be what you can't see. Like, I can't wait for someone else to create this. I'm a former journo, so I've got a little bit of a skill set in that. I love print magazine. Let's have a crack. And that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, 4 years ago. And you had that idea, and 6 weeks later you had a magazine, by the looks of it, which is incredible.
You've got to set yourself a deadline. I think that's, look, if I didn't have that deadline, I don't think it would have got up. I mean, I was at week three lying on the ground just crying, like, what have I done? Like, I love deadlines, but this is insane. So, yeah, just got that first one out and thought it would be a tick a box, but it was so interesting. You know, so many women like got it and then are like, well, where do we subscribe? When's the next one coming out? It's like, oh, okay, this is going to be a thing. So I think it's something that we were craving, to read our own stories and be able to, you know, just go, wow, she's having the same problems I am, or look what she's doing. I think I could do that as well. And take control of our future a little bit, and our financial situation. So yeah, it just makes me emotional thinking about the stories, Warwick, of what we've covered.
And I'm interested in this because this award so often goes to people from either farming communities or agribusiness itself. You're a publisher from outside of Bendigo. How do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a rural woman?
Yeah, absolutely. When we think about community, I don't think it's necessarily where you live. So, you know, what your postcode is per se. So I spend a lot of time on the road. Delivering social media workshops to really small rural towns and listening to these women about why they started their business. And, you know, I'm just so passionate about trying to, you know, shine a light on them and get more people to focus on what incredible businesses there are outside of the city limits, really. And, you know, Buy From the Bush has really helped showcase what we are doing in the bush per se. And, I am aware that I'm not from a farming community, although I can crutch a sheep and throw a fleece. But yeah, I feel really honoured that they've looked at Oak and the work that I'm doing as having an important impact in rural communities.
Not that this is a point scoring exercise, but if you can crutch a sheep, you're ahead of me. So that's
look. All good. I don't know where else it helps me.
Tell us a bit. There's a $15,000 bursary that you win as a result of this prize. What are your plans for that money? What do you want to do?
Absolutely. I want to just broaden the scope and reach of Oak. And in doing that, I actually want to make it more accessible through audio. So the bursary will just help support an audio version of the magazine so that, you know, those who have, you know, visual or learning difficulties or low literacy can still access these remarkable stories. It's going to help reduce that feeling of isolation because you can hear these stories as you're going about, you know, your day-to-day down in the paddock or traveling, you know, hundreds of kilometres to wherever you need to go. So I just cannot wait to get started in that space and bring our, hopefully, our next issue to life so that people can listen to it. Yeah, as well as, you know, hold that tangible product and, yeah, have it on their coffee table every day.
How do you celebrate? This is a big win. How are you going to celebrate?
Look, I'm in Melbourne at the moment. I'm talking to you in my car. It's very, very close to Melbourne Central. So, you know, I think lots of women that are listening will know that retail therapy is the best form of celebration. But, yeah, look, I don't have anything big planned. I don't have a party or an event. I'm just going to get stuck into our next issue. You know, that's what it's about. It's head down and just, yeah, keep pushing forward and try and make these deadlines.
Well, congratulations on your award. Good luck for the National Award, which comes up now in September, where another $20,000 could be awarded to you as you compete against the winners from other states and territories. And happy International Women's Day, Kimberly Finesse.
Thank you so very much.
That is the winner of the 2022 Rural Women's Award in Victoria, Kimberly Finesse, who goes to Canberra in September. ABC Rural actually played a part in the beginnings of the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award a very long time ago, and it's one that's close to our hearts. So there's a winner from every state and Territory, and then there's a gala dinner in Canberra in September where the winner of the national prize is announced. So a further $20,000 to in a bursary to a project of the winner's choosing, and you get to hear all about that. In fact, the award ceremony is usually hosted by the winner of the previous year as well, or the runner-up, and it's an absolutely fantastic thing. So Kimberly Furness, a worthy winner, as you've just heard, of the Victorian Award for 2022, but goes on from here. She is the publisher of Oak Magazine and based at Strathfield, say, near Bendigo in regional Victoria. Let's head to livestock markets now here on the Country Hour. A couple of markets to get through today, although I feel like we've had all the fun in our market reports from the High Country Calf Sales, Mountain Calf Sales, I should say, earlier on in the program, but we'll do our best anyway. I'm sure we've got our market reporters are on the ball for you today. We'll go to Wodonga first, and Leanne Dax is there. Good afternoon, Leanne.
Good afternoon. Wodonga agents yarded 900 and one head. Quality was very mixed, with very few yearling trade cattle and only a few pens of veal in the offering. Heavy cattle were in reasonable numbers, and the market threw some quite mixed price trends, which was quality related. The pick of the veal jumped 15 cents, $5.65 to $6. Trade steers sold 20 cents cheaper. Very few to quote, $5.20 to $5.50. Trade heifers were back 30 cents, $4.30 to $5.13. Medium weight feeder heifers, they gained 15 cents. $5.24 to $5.38. Heavy steers, 500 to 600 kilo, came under strong pressure, jumping 25 cents, $4.60 to $4.96. Bullocks surged ahead 30 cents, $4.35 to $4.82. Cows were the highlight of the sale, improving 40 cents. Heavy cows, $3.66 to $4.04. And the middle run, $3.10 to $4. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Thanks very much for that, Leanne. Let's go to the Shepherd and Cattle Market Report now and find out how cattle have been selling there. Nicole Varley's there for us today. Good afternoon, Nicole.
Good afternoon. Well, the numbers remain tight at Shepparton, 675 exports and 315 trade cattle. Competition was particularly strong across all dairy cow weights and grades, with livestock prices jumping by 20 to 30 cents there. Trade cattle were the talk of the day, with processors keen to secure numbers and prices there lifting 10 to 30 cents. The majority of the vealers, 457 to 627, averaging 557. Yearling steers to the trade, 480 to 575. Yearling heifer portion, 470 to 548, averaging 543. Growing steers and bullocks had mixed results. The 500 to 600 kilo steers, 455 to 518, averaging 457. 600 kilo plus bullocks made to 460. Beef cows, 345 to 380, averaging around 363 for the D4s. And the dairy portion, heavy dairy cows, 255 to 368 cents, to average around 317. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thanks very much for that, Nicole. We'll go to the sheep and lamb markets now to find out how they've been performing. Shiona Lamb has the Ballarat Lamb Market Report for us. Take it away, Shiona.
Agents drew for 29,000 lambs. White trade sold 5 cheaper. Medium trade were back 10. Heavy trade were 8 to 15 softer. Store buyers were active but didn't have the pressure from the processors, selling from $45 to $191 a head to be firm to 5 softer. Lambs to the trade 18 to 22 sold $149 to $176 a head. 22 to 24 made from $179 to $194, and 24 to 26 kilo lambs sold $186 to $210 a head, with an average range of $7.50 to $7.90 cents a kilo carcass weight. Export four score 26 to 30 kilo lambs sold $197 to $224, and extra heavy over 30 kilo sold $230 to $290 a head to average $7.20 to $7.70 cents a kilo carcass weight. There is still 13,000 sheep to be sold. This is Shiona Lamb at Ballarat for MLA.
Plenty to go there. Thank you very much for that, Shiona. That's about all the time we have for you on the Country Hour today. Actually, many of you wanting to have your say on that protest. Jane McNaughton, our reporter, was on the steps of Parliament House earlier with the beginnings of a protest with tractors in the main street. Buckets of spuds, plenty of placards, as you heard, that protest against the Western Transmissions Project connecting renewable energy projects at Bolgana to the city, as well with 85 metre high towers for power lines there. Different views coming in. Chris says, Warwick, I find it mind-blowing how many people are getting against the power line where were all the people when we were trying to stop the wind farm that was destroying our environment. I'm fighting the farm on my own now over the ongoing damage that's still occurring here, says Chris. And Chris got in contact before about some of the runoff issues that have happened on her property from then. But Tom says, well, everything in Melbourne's underground. This government's treating us like peasants, is his thoughts coming in. And Laurie's asking, the wind towers are going most mornings now. Where's all the power going? We can find out for you, Laurie. I don't exactly have an answer for you on that, but thank you very much for asking the question. Country Hour at abc.net.au is the email you can use. If you have a question like Laurie, you can text us during the show or just send us an email at your leisure whenever you'd like and we'll follow it up for you. Country Hour at abc.net.au. That's it for us today. Have a great afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow.